Whenever.
Whenever you want.
Yeah, we're recording right now, so.
We're on, okay. This is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Election Commission. The date is July 29th, 2013. It is 1:05 p.m. and we're meeting in the Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, the Secretary of State's office. I'm Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State. I'll be acting as the chair today. Our other chair, co-chair, Senator Hirone, is on the phone, but she was unable to travel up to Denver today. Steve, I think we have everybody present on the phone. Is that right? We don't have anybody absent today. Oh, there's Richard.
That's correct.
Except Richard. Yeah. Who just came in?
It's in for your tag.
All right, so the first item on the agenda is open public comment. Is there anybody here who wishes to make public comment?
There's a sign-up sheet rolling around somewhere.
But that's okay. Well, you can sign up later if you have public. Oh, okay. Do you have public comment?
Sure.
Okay. If you want to just step up to the microphone there, and if you could state your name, and if you represent a group, just put that on the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Lionel Washington. I'm the president of a whole lot of people for John Morris Issue Committee. And I'm actually just coming today to actually thank the Secretary of State and the state legislature for working to modernize the elections. There is an election on September 10th. The recall election looks like it's going forward. And I just wanted to say that I think it is... It's great for the people of Colorado, the people of Senate District 11, the Senate in El Paso County, that we will have these new election laws in effect for that election. I think it's great that we're going to have same-day voter registration. I think it's great that we're going to have an all mail-in ballot. And I also want to applaud the legislature and the Secretary of State for getting rid of the inactive voter clause and preventing thousands of Coloradoans from being disenfranchised. I think that we're moving in the right direction. Other states like North Carolina and Texas are moving backward. And with the laws that Colorado has passed, we're going to make it easier for people to get access to the polls. And I think we're going to have an opportunity to increase our turnout, increase participation in our great democracy. So I'm just here to say, as president of the issue committee, I want to say thank you for the Secretary of State and the state legislature for working to implement the new election laws and modernizing our system here in Colorado. I think we're moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else here who'd like to make public comment? All
right. Yes, thank you. My name is Douglas Towne. I am the CEO of Disability Relations Group. We are based out of Largo, Florida. I know Florida elections. Go ahead. It's okay. There you go. All right. I'm here because Colorado is perhaps going to set the model for the rest of the country for modern and accessible elections. And I applaud you for that. The disability community, of course, is a big part of elections these days. And we are looking forward to seeing what you all are going to do because there are a number of states around the country who are looking at what's now being called universal voting. And you all are first. So congratulations, and I wish you the best on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? All right. Thank you. Anyone else have public comment today? No? All right. Seeing none, the next item on the agenda is discussion with SLI Global Solutions, discussing our second needs assessment. And with us today is also the Uniform Voting Systems Advisory Committee Chair, Clerk Deborah Johnson from Denver, and the Uniform Voting Systems Public Participation Panel Chair, Clarissa Thomas, to participate in this discussion with us. SLI was picked as the vendor last week for this second report, and they have been gracious enough to attend the meeting and participate in this discussion so that hopefully we can give some positive direction to SLI in terms of what we are looking for in our report that will help not only the commission, but perhaps the uniform voting systems, and then hopefully SLI can also share some information with the work that's already been done. So I have not actually met SLI, so I don't know. So if you two just want to get up to the podium and introduce yourselves, and then I was wondering if the two chairs of the committees could come up. I have a microphone, but if you all can share this table, that would make it easier so we don't have to keep getting up and down from the microphones.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm Mark Phillips. I'm president and CEO of SLI Global Solutions. Very briefly, for those of you who don't know us, we are a IT services firm that focuses on quality assurance, independent verification and validation, and have a specialty in particular in voting systems. We are one of two voting system test labs in the United States. We're accredited by the Election Assistance Commission. We've been involved in testing and certification and analysis and a whole range of activities with voting systems for well over 10 years. And we are headquartered here several blocks from this office. So we're delighted, of course, as residents of Colorado, to be involved with this effort. Let me introduce my colleague, Tracy Mapps, who runs the voting practice.
Hi, I'm the Director of Operations with SLI. Myself and one of the project leads that I'll be working with will be in charge of working on this project and doing the assessment.
And I think, as far as I know, SLI hasn't interviewed anyone in person yet regarding the scope, or all we have at this point is just the scope that you've submitted and then the contract that has gone out.
We have a statement of work that we've submitted and a contract that was just executed late last week. We've got a kickoff meeting scheduled for tomorrow at 11 o'clock, which is where we'll actually, you know, make sure that we're all on the same page as far as what the assessment report will be, will include, that type of thing. So we have not done any interviews as of yet.
Okay. And so just so you know, in terms of your kickoff meeting, a lot of that direction you're going to get today,
yes,
hopefully from the commission in terms of our expectations as to who you would interview, what kinds of information would be included in the report. You have a kickoff meeting with the secretary's office?
It's tomorrow. It's here. Hillary Rudy helped to set that up.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then we all have your request for quotes, so we have some background. And is there anything else that you want to add in terms of scope of the project?
Say that basically, you know, the pieces that that we are planning to do are an analysis of each of the county's current voting systems and services, an analysis of voting systems certified by Colorado and the EAC, an analysis of the process for certification, analysis and recommendations for the replacement of voting systems, and estimated equipment costs, and analysis of funding resources available to the counties and the state. So that's basically what we're looking at, is the scope of the project, and we look forward to hearing more about what you guys are looking for in the report today.
Okay.
The only thing that I would add, we are looking forward to getting direction and mostly prioritization from the commission and the secretary's office. I mean, this job is one of those jobs that could be 6 months to a year long, or it could be a month. This is a month. So with that in mind, I think it's very important for us to gain an understanding of what is most important to you and make sure that we direct our resources and assets to make that happen. So we're here to listen.
Appreciate that. I guess I'll just look to the commission members in terms of any comments on priorities or questions about the scope of work so that we can just have that discussion. Go ahead.
Cindy, agree. Will you be looking at how accessible our voting processes are in the counties to accommodate disabilities, either visually impaired, mobility impaired, you know, if you only have one arm and you can't do a machine, or those types of things?
You know, that's not something that has been included in the scope of work with the contract that we have in place. you know, again, we are looking for some information from you guys and what the priority is, and what you would like to see in that report. So it's something that I guess would be up for discussion as to whether or not that should be included based on the other pieces that, that we were understanding need to be in the assessment report.
Now, what we will be doing, there are, of course, existing requirements in the EAC's document, Voting Systems Guide, VVSG. So conformance with specifications for existing voting systems as well as what is contemplated and how you certify those is within the scope. But as far as establishing those requirements, establishing policy, I think is beyond the scope of this study itself.
Thank you.
Hi, Hillary Hall, Boulder County Clerk and Recorder. One of the things that isn't necessarily spelled out, but I would like to see included is, and we've been talking around it, is the uniform voting solution that's being looked at. I don't see how we can possibly have the conversation about the future of our election equipment without including that. Have you given some thoughts of how you might go about that? Two-part question. One is how to go about it, and also how to make use of, because I know you guys have done a bunch of data already, and how to make use of what we already have to help with that.
You know, that is something that we've started looking at, because I know that there's already been some interviews, some data that's already been gathered around that. And so we would like to leverage as much of that as possible in the assessment that we're doing, because, you know, as part of this contract, we are considering that you're interested in a unified voting system. And so understanding what each of the county's requirements are, you know, how best a unified voting system is going to work for them is a part of what we're looking at. But we would like to leverage the information that's already been pulled, that's already available to us.
Oh, go ahead.
This is Richard Westfall. I would just want to underscore that. I think it's really important. And the more that you're in your analysis and your reporting, you can be transparent, is to show what's been done so far and really incorporate that. So we as the commission can actually get a better feeling for that and have it, again, be transparent, come through to us. So show what you're building on top of. I think that would be very important.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, we were just last week looking at some of the questions that were going out to the different counties, or the questions that had been asked by that committee. And I mean, if we can leverage as much of that and then add on to it with the questions that we asked, that was our plan. And so we'll include, you know, what's already been done, and then in addition, what we add to it in our report.
This is Martha Tierney. I want to direct my questions to Deborah and Clarissa to the extent that they can answer some of this in terms of the timing. I know you guys have already gathered a lot of data. What's the timing of the survey, is that what we're calling it? The survey that has already been sent out, and how quickly can that data and other data that you've already compiled be transmitted to SLI?
This is Deborah Johnson, the chair of the Uniform Voting System Advisory Committee. We did two surveys. The initial survey was really asking the counties what were your equipment needs. And I'm just going to give you one that just stuck out the most was maintenance. The cost of maintenance is killing the counties versus actually the equipment. And then the other thing was, is that a majority of those that responded, and we also had quite a few of them. I can't remember, Al, you can help me with this percentage of the first 40-some, 50-some counties responded out of 60, that they don't plan to replace their equipment in the next 5 years. So those two items on the first survey. And the second survey, we haven't gotten all the responses back yet, is asking more in terms of cost. What kind do you have? What kind do you think you may need? And then what are some of the anticipated costs that you may have associated with that?
Okay. So some of those surveys that you're doing, they're not available as of yet. Is that right? Because we went out and some of them had already been posted on the website, but you have more that you're planning to make
just
available?
One more. I don't know if we haven't posted the results yet. We haven't. The committee has not even reviewed the data yet.
If we could even get, you know, a listing of the questions that you're asking, that would help us so that when we're putting together our surveys, we're not duplicating those.
Yeah.
looking between both groups, because I know we want to hear more also from uniformed voting systems. I'm not sure if that's coming later, but if not, from both of you, how I would want to know, do you have areas that this work would work with you, and are there specific parts that you've been discussing where having the assessment from SLI would be helpful in some of the conversations that you're, and issues that you're addressing, and maybe if you could speak to some of those from either, okay. From both groups.
And I think maybe validation might be the biggest thing in terms of what are the data that we have, looking at some validation of that data. Also, I mean, we have some gaps. There were some very large counties that didn't respond to the mm-hmm. to the survey, that you could look at some of the gaps that we may have in there. But I think we're more than willing, I mean, the committee as a whole could sit down with you and kind of go through what our train of thought was, and, you know, asking the survey and where we wanted to go with this. And basically what we were looking at is, in preparation for the RFP that's supposed to go out on October 1st. So we're trying to get some data to actually look at what should be in it and what should not be in it.
This is Clarissa Thomas, the chair of the public participation panel, and our scope is mostly looking at the public input and how the public's input, whether some of these public members are general members of the public or they're technical experts within the elections field, to submit their comments regarding what a purported uniform voting system would look like. You know, the technicalities, the certification aspect, and we would also look at the commission to find out what the scope of the requirements for election systems within Colorado and the financial needs or the burden to the counties would be. So we are just starting to kick off. You know, we had one public participation meeting already held here in Denver, and while limited in comment, there was a lot of discussion within the panel members as to what we would hope to gather and what we're hoping to do when we set out and have our first meeting in Pueblo, and then we're having a meeting in Grand Junction and a meeting in Fort Collins to gather a statewide perspective if we can do that. So mostly we're going to, and we're eager to get those comments back from the public, again, whether it's general or technical experts, again, to be able to complement the work of the advisory committee and perhaps get some more knowledge okay. from this commission and this body to find out how it is that we can best work together to get this uniform voting system kicked off in a timely manner, or not so much timely, but in a manner that will help Colorado achieve that ultimate implementation of a great system, if we can say that.
And that's the interplay between these two commissions has also been a subject that we've sort of touched on as a commission, which is this commission, as you read in the bid proposal, was formed as a result of legislation last year. There were some existing groups that were already formed that were doing work. And then the question has sort of arisen as you see this kind of, as you see the groups coming together, this is actually the first meeting where they've met. And so there may be some discussion at some point, and this is really more for the commissioners than for you all, but about the role of the uniform voting group and whether that really should be part of this commission's role, is to have this as a subgroup, and I think that's something we need to keep in mind when we have that discussion going forward about what is the role of this commission as we come up with goals and objectives and some type of agreement as to how far our authority goes or how far we want it to go. Commissions like this, where we see that kind of overlap, sort of create a bit of a... not a straight line in terms of governance, which makes it a little bit more difficult since they're operating in tandem to us rather than at direction from this group.
And this is Deborah Johnson again, and I can just piggyback on that in that our committee did discuss that shortly after the legislation was passed and was really wondering, you know, where do we belong? Should we be on our own track or should we be a part of the commission? And we have not answered the question. However, the question has been posed.
Right, and I think this commission agreed maybe in a week or two when we had a breather, we would talk about those kinds of goals and objectives. And this is just, I think, an example of something we need to be thinking about. Is this additional group that is out there, and again, they're far along in their work, so it was never our intent to stop them from the work they had planned, but rather to decide whether to incorporate that at some point.
This is Deborah Johnson again, and I think I'm going to put, there's four things in which that we see right now that we have not accomplished yet, and then it's kind of something we probably could work with you on it. Number one, you already mentioned it, was certification. Huge issue given our limitations in the state of Colorado on certifying equipment. Funding, you've already mentioned that one, and how are we going to pay for this in the event that there is a uniform system. Thirdly, governance. Who's going to govern this? Is it going to be in the Secretary of the State's office? Is it going to be a third party governing this uniform system? And then fourthly, legislation coming up in 2014, 15, whenever that we may need in the future. So those are the four things still on our plate.
And one thing that I think is of a concern to the public and would probably be good for the commission to hear just informationally is, you know, how do you define a voting system? Because you're obviously going to go out to these counties and you're going to see different things in different counties, and some are going to have like signature verification done automatically, some aren't. You know, at what point are all these things going to be considered, you know, maybe from an EAC perspective, maybe from thinking about expanding our definition of a voting system to an election system. You know, what is going to be uniform and what goes into that? Because at some point you have kind of the difference between the online voter registration system and the pen I'm using. Mm-hmm. You know, is the pen part of the, you know, the election system because it's used in, you know, checking things on, you know, the staplers. I mean, those kinds of really basic things, where do we make that division between what is part of the election system? And then once we decide that, you know, obviously the items in our voting system have to be certified because of federal standards. But if it's not part of the voting system, but it's part of an election system, then where does that fit in terms of testing and, you know, and compliance, or should that even be part of uniformity? So those kinds of just, I think, starting out at that level and trying to decide, you know, what is it that we're really looking at, and then kind of getting down into the granular, because I think we need to set that overall goal.
And I think that's a good point, because that was one of the questions that I wanted to bring to you, was to ask, you know, what is your definition of a voting system when you're asking us to do an analysis of voting systems of the certification process? You know, is that, you know, what the EAC is defining as a voting system, or is it something more? Does it include your voter registration? Does it include, you know, your pen that you use to fill out your ballot? And so that's something that we need some guidance from you on in order to do this analysis the way that you want it to come out with.
And this is Deborah Johnson again, I'm sorry, but our group went through some pretty painful events or meetings in terms of trying to make that definition, and we did come up with a definition. However, again, I mean, you can look at what are we missing, what are the gaps, what can you add to it to make it better. But also, too, in when she talked about what is included, the advisory committee did make a list of those things that we thought should be included in the RFP. We weren't always agreed upon on what should be included. And our philosophy was that we should have a catalog of services, and that you should have contracts for printing of ballots, not necessarily that everyone had to use that printer, but an opt-in type of system where you would be have the ability to piggyback on that contract type of system is where we were heading. And we've made recommendations to that effect.
But I think that, this is Hillary, I think that is part of what this group needs to look at is what do we want included in evaluating. I know when it was included in the bill in the charge of the commission originally, we had some ideas around that, and it was probably not all the way to printing, but it was about, you know, the voting equipment that we currently use, where are the gaps, what do we have, and then also what equipment is needed in the voter service centers. And so what has this model changed for counties, and what do we need to do to ensure that all counties can execute this year, next year, and then into the presidential, and then how to work in uniform voting and gain the knowledge of what's the systems we really want, what are our shortcomings, and what are the parts that work. and how to do that in a time-appropriate manner and not rush it, just to rush it, especially when we hear that counties are, you know, no one's even thinking about replacing their system for, you know, 5 years. So balancing all of that, the RFP, you know, are we going to waste vendors' time with that if the commission goes in a different direction? How do we, some guidance on how to help put those pieces together? And it is complicated with when you add in the other layer of certification as well, as you guys well know too. So that's what I would like to see some help with.
I mean, certification and compliance testing are two different things, and they're done for two different purposes. And when you talk about a unified system, as you pointed out, yes and no, because portions of it you're going to need to certify. That's the traditional voting, you know, however you draw the box around it. There are other components that is not required. On the other hand, if you're going to have a unified voting system, you have to have some measure of assurance that the products that you're deploying are in conformance with the specifications of that uniform system. So, you know, two different answers depending on how you define it. The other thing that the commission may want to consider is there's also the commercial side of it. You have, you know, manufacturers, services suppliers, product suppliers that don't supply a end-to-end election system. They supply components thereof. And so, you know, there's quite a bit of strategy in the policies that you're going to be dictating. And I think it's very important to think through what you're trying to achieve. There's no right way to do this. There is no, you know, Webster's definition of what is an election system versus a voting system that's going to serve you. What matters is what you're trying to achieve, and then directing policy and allowing standards to flow from that. And, you know, I don't think you want to be disconnected from what the market is out there today and what it's going to look like in probably the very near future.
So maybe as a commission, just so that we don't think we're going to give all of the direction today, maybe we should be thinking more about, and I'll just see how other people feel about this, but it seems like the first part of this report is going to have to be what everybody has now and whether what everybody has now is going to work in November. So kind of analyzing the bill and looking at what equipment people have and whether that's going to make it through the 2013, and then start looking forward and try to gather some more of this information, like what the list is out of UVS. We don't actually have that list, whether we agree that that's what we want. Looking at when they put together the kind of future of voting. I'm not prepared to probably give direction on part two today because I don't have enough information. It may be something that you can get between now and then because, you know, you can use Al or other members of the commission as a resource to see where they're going and whether you think that's maybe where this group should be going or where the market's going. I don't know how other people feel, but
I think I've heard you use the words policy decisions a few times, and it seems to me that you're saying there's some policy decisions that need to be made in order to really define the uniform voting system. So I'm a little confused on separating policy from what you'll come out with. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Well, you know, you don't want get the horse before the cart or the cart before the horse, whatever the right. By making that definition, it will impact the scope of the study that we do and the way we approach it. And that's up to you guys to do. And then we'll follow that dictate. To not make that explicitly, we'll go ahead and do the job. I mean, we're a technical provider. We're not a policy outfit. We don't comment on that. We don't take positions on that. We implement through technical services. So that's what I was referring to.
I guess what concerns me, and I'm dealing with experts on elections here, and I'm not, so what concerns me is what are those policy decisions that we need to make over time that will drive the, you know, the requirement, the RFP? I mean, maybe there's a list of policy decisions that are yet to be made, but I don't have that in my head. Maybe you guys do.
Well, and that's why I'm suggesting maybe we get the list. I mean, the basic issue is that in the Help America Vote Act, there's a definition of a voting system.
Right.
And that is traditionally thought of as your tabulation system. It's not thought to be things that are on the front end and things that might be on the back end. So, for instance, it's generally not going to be your uniform voting system here, and it's not going to be your results, you know, some kind of uniform results system. It's going to be the part in the middle after the ballot is cast is how they define it. So, I mean, there is a differing view on what even that means. I mean, I think we in the Secretary's office, you know, we have a traditional way that we look at it, but certainly others have, you know, expanded that beyond in different states, and different states have different interpretations. But that's why I make the distinction between the voting system and what I would call an election system, which is more of the, you know, what's your experience walking in the door to looking at the results, or, you know, your experience registering to vote, receiving the ballot in the mail, dropping it off, you know, all those kinds of things go into an election system. And that's why it changes the scope of the report so much, because if we limit it just to a voting system, the voting system is the only thing that the EAC requires that we get certified. The other components, some states have oversight, some states don't. It's different as you move around the country. And to what extent do you want to have oversight as an organization over these other things that are kind of add-ons to a voting system? And they may not be necessarily required. It might make it more convenient. You know, it's all that kind of thing.
And there's also the relationship between oversight and costs. Many of the states who have oversight also pay for the system. So there's that part of the equation as well. In our state, there is currently no cost. The counties are, the assumption now is the counties will be paying for the next round of appointment unless we change something.
Deborah, can you share, this is Martha Tierney, what the definition that you guys use right now is an operating definition? Is it, I assume that it is more expanded than the HAVA definition.
And if I might, we're kind of at a point where we're assuming that's our starting point. The advisory committee's current recommendation on what's in the system is our starting point. I think we're kind of coming to that assumption.
If you want to.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Well, it's a page and a half long. So, and it goes into detail because of kind of, it goes into like a defined set of equipment, processes, and documentation, and then it goes into that whole long list of all of that we included in it. But overall, we just said, is an integral component of Colorado's comprehensive election structure, including but not limited to voter registration, manual and automated signature verification, accessibility, poll books, ballot design and production, ballot on demand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes through a list of the things, I think. But since then, we've kind of strayed from that. But I did bring it just in case I got asked. So yeah, that is our system. And I think, I mean, just to piggyback on what Suzanne was saying, I mean, in our conversations with the counties right now, I think we're going to make it through 2013 in this new model. And I don't see where there's going to be equipment issues in this round. So, I mean, you can look at what we may have, but I think where our concern is more in terms of 2014 and running that election and what equipment are we may need, or what, you know, is going to come out in this new election model.
This is Clarissa from the Public Participation Panel, and in response to some of the policy question, my hope is that the public input provides us with some sort of a framework or starting point to gather if enabling legislation, which is a policy component, would be required to make sure that there's a certification standard, because what is in existence right now dates back to 2002. And do we want to be working to models of 2002, or do we want to forge ahead with the future and have the latest technology to be able to have a uniform system that's going to include the latest technological advances for all the counties, as opposed to working with a model that may be archaic for some of the larger counties and bring everybody up to speed. So that is one of the things that I would hope that the public input provides us, not only from that aspect, but also how the funding is going to happen. You know, we always expect, and, you know, unfortunately we live in a state where unfunded mandates are very much the norm, but do we want to carry the brunt of funding for the smaller counties, which may not necessarily be able to afford it? So these are the things that we hope to gather from public input to be able to, whether it requires the legislature to come up with that legislation or, you know, alternative funding mechanisms or certification nonetheless has to come by way of enabling legislation. So those are some of the things that we hope to gather in addition to some technical specifications about what the equipment needs for people are.
So maybe with both sides of that is that might be useful is for you all to say, like, what is essential for this new election model? Because a lot of the description was made before 1303 was passed. And so maybe that's the intersection is what's essential, what's helpful, what's optional, and then that might give us some direction as to, you know, then what policies need to be set based on how those pieces interact with our voting system. Because I heard, you know, some pieces on there are great to have for a large county, but absolutely not essential for a small county. And so maybe, I don't know if that would be useful to the commission, because again, that's also what this is both for the legislature and this commission to be able to make future decisions based on. And so helping define what do we, and how to do it without duplicating the work that's already been done. But the bill is a new piece since this has been started. So what, you know, what does have to be in every county in order for them to execute this model, and what's be nice, I, just as a start.
This is Martha Tierney. I want to echo what Hillary said. And one of the things I think you'll find, and I want to encourage you to look at, is how things are being done differently now. And while you don't have to make policy decisions, I think in compiling that data, presenting it in a way that allows us to try to measure what would be the best practice. So, for example, counties do, in vote centers, employ a lot of different models in terms of how to have ballot styles available. Some print them all out and have them in big bins, many styles, so that no matter who walks in the door, they're going to have those styles there. Others find that to be too burdensome in terms of printing costs, so they try to have ballot on demand. Some don't have the ballot on demand printers that would print a real ballot, so they're being printed on something that may not be a real ballot. So those kinds of differences, which I think are going to be key to implementing this bill. Vote centers, anybody walks in the door in that county, you need to have every ballot style available. Compiling what's being done now and then helping us sort through, of course, with in tangent or somehow working alongside the Uniform Voting System group, what how we can help make choices, policy choices, or recommend policy choices in light of that kind of data.
So I think that answers the question of whether you're going to go a little beyond the voting system, because printing is obviously going to be a little bit beyond, but is a huge component of the implementation of this bill. So I think that that's a list that we'll have to come up with, you know, hopefully next time. We have a list.
You already have
yeah,
a list.
We'll have to agree on a list next time.
Ours is the best.
Yeah, I mean, theirs is obviously the best. But, you know, if you could start taking a look at, you know, the materials that they have and then come back and give us an assessment about what you think is going to be important for looking in terms of implementation of this bill. Because some of the things on this list might not necessarily have changed because of the implementation of 1303, and some may have. And, you know, there will be some obvious ones. You know, obviously we don't need as many DREs because we're not going to be doing polling places. And so what are we going to need? You know, that kind of thing in terms of efficiency. So I think that that's probably a good start. And you all probably know more than we do anyway about trying to gather that data and then come back and give us some feedback on what our options would be in terms of going forward on the report. I think that the first part of the report is probably still fairly self-evident, that you need to gather what everybody has and whether that makes it through A, 2013 and B, 2014, and then look toward uniform systems in the future. Know what anybody else thinks about that kind of a plan, or if we have, you know, if we can agree on that, then I think we could start giving them some direction on how to proceed in gathering that information and maybe coming up with some people that would be appropriate for them to talk to.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, I agree. This is Martha Tierney again. Do you have specific questions that you think would be helpful to pose to the commission to help you get started today? Or do you think that kickoff meeting tomorrow is going to be your start? Or how can we be most helpful?
I think going through and looking more into the data that's already been gathered on the Unified Voting System Committee, and then getting some of the questions that you're already asking, you know, that has not been made public yet, I think that would be helpful. You know, I think, you know, as far as looking at what everyone has now and then determining if that's going to work for 2014, I mean, I think we know what we need to do to figure that out. I think looking at, you know, what the best solution is in regards to a unified voting system, with that being the next piece, I think there's going to have to be some more conversation around that and get a little bit more information from this group there to figure out where we're going there. Because I think that's a little bit different than what we had our heads wrapped around coming in, because of what we were thinking a voting system is. And so that's a little bit broader, and so we'll just need to look at it a little bit differently. But I don't know that I have any questions around that right now. I think starting out with some of those survey results and talking to that group will help.
So maybe, Al, if you could get that information to them and then to the commission so that we have a chance to look at it and can then have a follow-up next week.
Do you have anything?
No. Yeah. So just on a little bit of process, so the kickoff meeting tomorrow, and I'm figuring that's mostly with the Secretary of State's office staff at
you
this
know,
point, or
Hillary
has the commission
was
going
to... Okay, so probably the right people, yeah.
So I guess the other side of that is how to maybe kick off part one and kick off part two, and it seems like maybe some of the groups that are on the commission would be a good group for you to meet with, to help with some of that definition from the county, what would be useful from the county side, because you all have done so much work, that I volunteer your time. but you know, and maybe even the, well, it's probably premature for the commissioners, but but with the counties that are already involved with that could be a good work to help add direction.
If I can get some contact information from you after, and
that'd be great.
Okay,
if others are okay with that, or.
Mm-hmm. This is Martha Tierney. I think it will be key to make sure that you hear directly from the counties who are implementing the elections and the Secretary of State, so you get sort of both voices.
So beyond the, I mean, individually we could have them call each member of the commission, or if there's other county clerks we want to have involved or other stakeholders, do we have ideas for them? Does anybody have any suggestions?
Hi, I'm Jessie. I just wondered, so you, from your proposal, it said you're going to meet with Judd and the others tomorrow as a sort of as a kickoff. Mm-hmm. So I would just reiterate that instead of just here and there, the clerks or the clerks association or the Unified Voting Systems Commission, I think that they should be on the front end of that conversation too, since what you're going to be doing is determining what's needed for this year too. We already had the clerk from Denver say that systems-wide, equipment-wide anyway, that it may they're pretty sound for this year. I want to just get some kind of a reassurance that on the front end tomorrow or as soon as you start with Secretary of State's office that those folks are involved too. And then secondly, someone from the voting rights world too. So one of our commissioners, you know, that's why she's on the commission. That's why I'm on the commission. Should probably weigh in too at some point, whether or not it's the kickoff, because I know you have a lot of work to do on the front end. But in some formal way, they should probably be involved as well.
I'm kind of glad you brought that. I mean, one of the things that we had hoped to get out of either this session or probably more likely tomorrow is we're really looking for that list of, you know, folks that should be involved. And then we'll do our thing based on the input that you give us. We're not going to make that list up. We're looking for the Secretary's office or commission to simply provide that, and then we'll go off and make sure that we're gathering information and doing the surveys and things like that. So really, what we're looking for is some scoping information, both in terms of the breadth of this task, as we had already discussed, you know, what we're looking at, but then also exactly the information sources that we need to look at and consolidate. We're aware that there's been a lot of work going on, and the last thing we want to do is, you know, we're not starting with a clean sheet of paper. And that's a good thing, because if we were in 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks, whatever this is, there's only so much you could do. So a lot of this job is going to be consolidating the right information from district sources, kind of bringing it all together in one place that people can make sense of. And we recognize that. But we're going to be looking to, you know, your offices really for guidance to say, okay, here are the folks that we really need to be involved. This is the places you need to go to get information. Here's the documentation set, so that we can, you know, do the work of bringing that all together into a, you know, one picture, if you will. So we don't think we're the guys that kind of put that list together. We're the guys that get the list and then go do our thing. Is that fair?
Well, I know we have these two on the list. In terms of clerks that would be involved, I know there's a number on the uniform voting. Are there... Do you want to just go from that list, or are there other people you want to?
A good starting point. I'm not sure, since we haven't, as an association, been that involved in it, I would want to take it back. And Fran, maybe you have some ideas, too, of who else we would want to be included, taking a look at that. Just trying to think of who's on it right now.
And this is Elena Nunez. I would think it would also make sense to reach out to the business practice subgroup. They have a slightly different task, but they've been thinking about how to implement the law in terms of what that takes, both leading up to the election and when a voter walks into a voter service and polling center. So I would think some of the clerks and their staff who've been participating in those conversations might have some good insights from the technology perspective, you know, what's required from a voting system. So reaching out to them would make sense.
I mean, getting some contact information for these groups would be helpful too. You know, and I look at the list that you guys contacted for each of the counties, and, you know, hopefully those people, contacting them again with additional questions, they're going to be willing and, you know, to answer us in a timely manner. I mean, they've already been asked a ton of questions. So, you know, we just need some of that contact information so we know who in each of those counties to reach out to.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly get that from us. And then maybe if you want to start with the two from the UBS, and then maybe Clerk Hall from the business practices subgroup, okay, and Elena and Jesse from the voting rights, then maybe that's a good place to start, and then they can give you additional names if they feel it's appropriate, and hopefully you can get some of those or most of those interviews done this week.
Okay.
Does that sound... Anybody else that you all want to include? Or no? Okay.
Well, the only other one that I would add, Faith Gross is here from the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People, and she's done a lot of work around accessibility. She would be a good resource as well.
Anything else? Go ahead.
This is Jesse again. I've got a quick question about timeline. You kindly drafted out what you thought you would be able to do when you thought you'd be able to do it. As far as just establishing what your sort of redraft of after listening to this and talking to the other folks, what you think will be done, when could we expect kind of a rough, even bulleted like this is very, very helpful for the scope of the thing and then the
subsequent timeline?
I would think that after the kickoff meeting tomorrow, after we sit down and get together, if we can provide a timeline, then that would be, I mean, if that works for you.
That you would provide a timeline or we would? You would. Okay. So by the next meeting, we could have a timeline and then have a future discussion about...
You guys meet weekly? We only knew about this meeting.
Sorry. So. Yeah. We meet every Monday.
Every Monday. Yeah. So you're expecting us to come every Monday then?
Well, either on the phone or in person, okay. Just to continue to get an update since we only have another four meetings, I think, till we have to adopt.
Okay.
I think that'd be helpful.
So we could certainly provide something with the next meeting.
Yes. Yeah, that would be. And in terms of notes, I don't know, last time did we have them send the notes? The notes, yeah. So if you could, for the next meeting, send the notes of the interviews that you do and then the timeline, I think those would be the two things. And then maybe if you have looked at some of the UBS, if you could outline what documentation you have, what documentation you need, and perhaps some recommendations for the group on the direction that you're capable. I mean, there may be a time issue here and that you can't look at everything. And so if you could give us some ideas about and recommendations on where to go with the UBS option, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Anything else for SLI? Oh, you have a comment? Can you get up to the microphone? Sorry, otherwise people can't pick you up.
I just wanted to encourage the commission to reach out to grassroots organizations around the state of Colorado. A couple of organizations that come to mind are the Colorado Progressive Coalition and Citizens Project in Colorado Springs. I think that would kind of give you kind of broad front range perspective, as well as the state conference of the NAACP. I think as we look at reviewing and implementing new voting processes and systems, I think it's important to reach out to grassroots organizations and kind of underserved communities as well.
Thank you. And I don't know if it's been advertised very broadly, but I know that public participation panel is actually going to be in Pueblo on Wednesday, taking public comments. So if you have any comment or any other people that you'd like to bring to that commission, it's going to be pretty limited to the issues you've been hearing about today regarding voting systems. But, you know, that's why they're there, is to try to get as much public comment as they can to hold that hearing. So if you know any, I think it's at 1.
1 o'clock
at the CU.
CSU.
Yeah, CSU. So thank you. All right, great. All right, anything else for SLI? All right, well, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Look forward to seeing some of your results. And thank you to our UBS.
I was going to say, our UBS people, before you guys have done, is there anything else you wanted us to know about the work you've been doing that would be helpful, or have we covered it? Sorry, because I was also part of, from at least my understanding, part of the intent was also just to hear from you all of, you know, maybe give us some information on how we work together, either, you know, do we blend, do we continue to report in? I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on what's working, how can we help, how do we, you know, again, we all want to make better voting systems and voting processes for the state of Colorado, and that's the big, broad, easy one. So
I think the conversation around how we work together, or are we together, or are we still separate groups? I mean, I think that question, I mean, in listening to where this is going, is very similar to where we have been. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope we're not duplicating services. So I think we need to look at, you know, what have we done? What results do you guys want? How we can complement that and not do the same thing.
This is Clarissa. I would just like to pretty much echo what Deborah's saying. And from our perspective, I made a couple of points that our goal is to, one, our work is fairly limited, what we've, you know, thus far done. And we're hoping to gather that public input so that we can better serve not only the public, but the voting community in general, to be able to come up with what I mentioned as a great Colorado unified system, if that's, or uniform system, I should say unifying, but that's a slip of the tongue. If it's a uniform system that we're all moving towards, that it is ultimately the best system, that while not perfect, it could be something that everybody's going to be, and somebody, I believe the gentleman from Florida mentioned that we're potentially being looked at as a model. If that's the case, then we want to be able to put something forth that helps the small and large counties. And yeah, with that in mind, we know that it's not going to be perfect. But my charge as a chair of the public participation panel is to make sure that we gather that public input and work in tandem with our, I say our sister committee, because they started their work long before we did. And we're not here to, you know, repeat or redo or even duplicate. We're trying to learn from the advisory committee, and we hope to gather what this commission, since the legislation enabled you, we hope to gather the information necessary to be able to work all the components together for a better voting system. That's our goal.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just curious about the public participation input. Because, and this really probably not directly pertinent, but it seems to me that the voting system is not that visible to the public. You know, the process is, but the actual system isn't. So I'm just curious about your input. I mean, who are these people that are capable of understanding the equipment, you know, and actually telling us how it should work?
Right, that's a great question. I believe I mentioned that we had very limited input in our first meeting here in Denver, and it's going to be, I'm going to say it's a limited group of folks that are very policy wonkish, if that's the term. They are very interested in the process in its entirety, whether it's the experience of voting, you know, voter access, to casting a ballot, to knowing how systems are tabulated and how the results of an election are delivered. The folks that have been following elections in the state of Colorado that have come to testify thus far are people that either have very limited technical expertise or vast technical expertise. And it does run a wide gamut, but the spectrum of information for us is going to come from those folks that have the technical information to make us be able to provide and work with the advisory committee to see what this voter system is going to look like and how this RFP is going to put together this plan, and if it's going to be a skeleton for what Colorado is going to look at. But, you know, public comment can be anything from, I don't like the experience that I show up to when I vote because the lines are long, to, let me tell you about the computer system that I had to use it. I mean, it's very wide-ranging, and it's fascinating to hear how passionate some people are, and sometimes people just want to complain and vent about the process. So that's the type of public input that we're going to get. We can't limit what we're going to receive, because you'd be surprised how many people do follow and how many people don't really care anything about the elections process. So we hope to make it successful. And our emphasis has been, please communicate all the members of the committee that are part of it. It was our goal to make sure that they all, you know, informed their respective advocacy groups if they're representing somebody. Please make sure that people turn out. When we go to Grand Junction and Fort Collins, make sure that people turn out, because if the public doesn't provide the input, then there's no public input, and it doesn't serve me any good or anybody in the public to have the same commissioners, the same panel members talk amongst ourselves, because we're already representing one group, but we would like to hear from the public at large. And that is our goal, that the better informed these people are about the meeting, the better the public input will be for all of us. So if you can all also provide information to your constituents and to the groups that you represent, that would be fabulous. So it's Pueblo on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and then we have the meeting that we're still working out the final details for Grand Junction in August, and then September in Fort Collins.
Where's the meeting located? On Pueblo?
At the Library and Resource Center at, yeah, LARC. They call it LARC, and it's room 204. Is it 204 or
10? CSU.
Yeah, it's CSU Pueblo, I'm sorry. But it's LARC. Everybody knows it as LARC.
And how about Grand Junction?
We are still working out those details, and I'm not sure if it's going to be August 14th or 15th, and we're going to be working with the county, so Mesa County, and they're providing us the facilities as well as Larimer County, and that will be in September.
Just a little added editorial. The RFP is planned to go out on October 1st.
And I know that your report is due September something. And so I think you need to kind of figure out what input are you going to have into that process, if any. So I think that you need to look at whatever your study that you're getting is, what kind of information is going to assist that process, or if it's going to be a part of that process.
So if we could take a look at the draft RFP now, could you send that out to the commission?
This question is slightly off topic, but we got public comment today from Harvey Branscombe about questions that he thought we should consider as we're looking at a voting system. And they look to me like very similar to questions that were submitted to the Uniform Voting System Advisory Committee as well, perhaps for the survey. And I'm wondering if that's correct, and maybe this is a question for Deb or for Al, and if they were included or if there was the decision made not to include them.
There was a decision. There were questions were submitted from the public participation panel to include into our second survey, and it was the advisory committee's decision not to include them because they were really a different focus than what we were after.
So that's helped. So then, just to make sure I understand, as you were looking at these questions in light of the voting system question, it seemed like they were a slightly different approach. So that was why you chose not to do that.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Let's go ahead.
Well, I guess that raises the question of, are we going to do anything with Branscombe's questions? I mean, a lot of them center on problems of the past, kind of, don't they? I mean, what went wrong and that sort of thing. I mean, there's sort of a line of questioning that seems to get left by the wayside if we don't use them. So,
well, I think it's something that we can.
I mean, we got a handout. I wonder.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something that we can pass along in terms of putting together a report as they think about, you know, what other kinds of questions they want to ask the counties. This may be a document that they can, you know, look to. But some of these questions, you know, how many Canvas board members you have, that, I mean, that is not really a voting system question. And so they'll have to go through this and see which ones apply to their report and which ones don't. Now, at some point, if this commission determines that, I mean, I guess it goes back again to the whole scope and governance of the commission, you know, if we are implementing voting in Colorado, then maybe some of these are relevant and we would want to, you know, ask questions of the counties about these kinds of things, but I don't think we've gotten there yet. So certainly we, you know, have accepted this, and I think we posted it as a public comment, but I'm not sure we're prepared to do anything with it beyond pass it to the vendors at this point.
It also looks to me, putting aside the historical questions that are in there, some of the practices or things that the business practice subgroup has been discussing. So to the extent that they are relevant to implementation, I think some of that will naturally come from their work.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you both very much for coming down today. Appreciate your time. All right. The next agenda item that we have is the business practices subgroup briefing.
So it's going to be a short briefing. We do have one issue for the commission. We still had the echo, and with everyone being on the phone, we postponed our agenda to the 7th. So we'll follow up. We have a couple more models that we're working on, the exception model in the voter service and polling center. We'll have a flow chart for that after this meeting on the 7th. And then we'll also just be discussing the continuing the county portion of the security discussion that we've been having, and getting some ideas from them of how do we check our security questions on the counties, or, you know, what's needed from that side, and get the business practice group to make a recommendation. The one item that we did discuss was we would like to continue. We have someone who has resigned from one of the counties who was on our SCORE advisory board, which then turned into the business best practice group. The way that group has been established is that the Secretary of State's office had two appointments and the Clerks Association had the other appointments. We would just like since it's kind of new territory, to replace in the same manner, where this is one that the Clerks Association appointed, and we would like to go ahead and fill that with a member who can contribute, similar size county of the one that resigned. It was Jefferson County member who resigned due to taking a job outside of elections. So if no one has any objections, then we'll just put it before the Clerks Association board like we've done before.
I guess I would just like to, I mean, if El Paso or someone who's not in the association wants a spot on it, I'd just like them to be given consideration to be appointed. That would be my only comment.
Okay, and that's also, the secretary has two appointments as well, so that may also be a point place for that as well. So.
All right, is that it?
That's it, and we'll follow up. We couldn't take the echo.
Okay. well, then.
It's been fixed, so yes, thank you. Sorry, Stephen.
It has been fixed. All right. So the next item is a security discussion. And I think we were given some additional materials, and I believe we have staff here today to discuss the security. Yeah, if you want to just come up here and just introduce yourself to them. And
hi, I'm Rich Schleip. I'm the Information Security Officer for the Secretary of State's office.
And for anyone at home with children, this would be a good time to turn it off because Rich is big on nightmarish scenarios. So. All right. So, Rich, you want to tell us what you put in our packets here?
So basically, I just added some stuff to what Trevor talked about in the previous meeting, one of the more details. I apologize. Could you pronounce your name?
Matsumoto.
Matsumoto. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I mean, the important part definitely is the county level security on their workstations and ensuring that those security controls are in place, which is why we chose multi-factor authentication as one of our first things to get implemented. Because if you are dealing with a Trojan horse or a password stealing type device on a PC and it gets that password, well, it doesn't matter how good the password was, it's gone. So if that multi-factor authentication adds that next level to protect against such a scenario. I can go through each of these things. They're pretty extensive and talk about them. I don't know if you have specific questions or you want me to go through each item.
Committee have a preference? I'll defer to you because this was really...
Bob Rankin, I honestly think that, you know, just seeing this for the first time, I mean, from a personal point of view, I'd like to sit, read it, think about it, study it, talk to a few other people about it. I'm not able to just quickly respond to this kind of material, so
right.
I don't know how the rest of you feel.
Do you want an overview of it, or do you just want to take this and study it on your...
Maybe a short overview. I don't know how the rest of you feel, but, you know, I won't get much out of a short overview. I'd like to think about it.
Okay.
If you don't mind, actually, I'd kind of like to do both. If we could do an overview, have some time to review, and then maybe put it on the agenda for next week to actually dig in a little bit once we've had a chance to read it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll keep it simple for today, and then we'll go more in depth later. So one of the biggest things with keeping a computer system secure that's connected to the internet or just in general is to train users, to teach them what is a good or a bad practice. So what we've employed for all county user administrators is securing the human training. It's approximately 2 hours of training. OIT has a similar version, but theirs is about 45 minutes. We've selected most of the modules. You're probably familiar with it. That go through stuff like, what happens? How do you prevent getting a virus? What kind of antivirus should you have on your system? What kind of browsing habits should you have? What kind of tools are out there to protect your system? And so it actually goes through the fact that you should have updated antivirus. Everyone knows that. It goes through the different websites and tools that you can actually go through and have your PC checked, such as Secunia, to see if it's in compliance and how secure it is. It goes through that you shouldn't just install stuff on your workstation without an administrator looking at it and making sure it's a secure piece of software. So it's basically user training on how to keep your system secure. It even goes into how to secure your home computer systems, because we wanted to keep people interested. We didn't want to just talk about work and say, hey, this is what you need to do at work. Part of computer security is keeping people secure at home and at work, so they're actually interested in it. Most people that are passionate about elections and passionate about this stuff, I want everything secure. most other people, they just want their banking password secure. So when I start talking about their banking stuff and how it could be stolen with a Zeus Trojan, all of a sudden they're really paying attention. So there's a brief description of the modules they've taken, and you can see that 274 of the county user administrators have completed the training out of 286 that are enrolled. So we've had pretty good participation. Login and password authentication, I think most people are familiar with that. We have complex passwords. We want people to use a username and a password to log into the system. Two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication means that, in our case, it's something that you know, such as a username and password, and something you have, which is a token or a grid card. This assures that if some guy is coming in from Boston trying to hack at our system, he can try to guess as many username and passwords as he wants. It doesn't do him any good because he doesn't have the grid card or the other. He doesn't have the physical device associated with the account, so he can't get in. User policies, of course, are another way to educate users and get them to agree to meet to certain standards, such as securing their workstation and make sure it has updated antivirus. You can also see that we have our click-through agreement. Whenever you click through to log into SCORE, it says you must be an authorized user and that you should have antivirus and the property security controls in place. Wireless security standards, I think most people are familiar with, and that is just basically keeping your wireless networks secure so that people can't hack them from your actual location where you're coming from, using the proper security so people just can't get on the corporate network and start attacking it. Sorry. Then we get into the next critical part, and that's kind of more the back-end stuff. A lot of that was the visible stuff, as Trevor pointed out, to the users. The back-end stuff is making sure that the code that we're actually writing, especially on web applications, is secure code. Even if you have a secure, a good username and password, if you don't have secure code and they can find a way around the username and password field, you've got a problem. So you have to have developers that are educated in writing good, secure code. And to provide that, we've given our developers training year after year on secure coding. On any web applications that we have, such as Voter, we do web penetration testing, not only from an automated perspective, but we also have humans testing it to make sure that it follows the correct logic flow. As was pointed out, automated testing is good, but humans are much more creative at finding their ways around things, so we try and do both. Patch and vulnerability management is pretty standard. You want to keep your PC up to date and patched, so that there are no vulnerabilities in the programs running on your system. The IDS IPS systems that we currently have, we have one system in place and we're implementing two additional ones to be able to look for any anomalies in the computer systems to see any, if there's any odd behavior going on, we know about it so that we can detect if someone's trying to hack our systems or if they actually made it in. Geographic IP blocking, currently we're blocking all IP addresses outside the continental United States. Now, this doesn't mean that someone from another country couldn't get past those systems. They could simply use a Tor or a proxy and make it look like they have an IP inside the United States. So we are looking at, after we implement the grid cards, going the next step and locking that down closer to a county level rather than just the whole United States. One-day window activation for Vote Center I don't think is applicable anymore with the new House bill. I think Vote Center is going away, so we don't really need to discuss it. Centralized log correlation and monitoring, that's a pretty standard practice. Basically, is what that says is on our back-end systems, not the county systems, but our back-end systems, all the security logs and application logs go to a central server that then is protected and hashed so that we know that those logs haven't been modified, and they're also easily reviewable in case something does happen so we can figure out how far the intruder or event made it into the network. We have several trained security professionals throughout the organization. Logs and all these systems don't do any good if you aren't reviewing them and looking at them and making sure that someone's paying attention. The future security controls, as we put up more web-based applications on the voter systems, if we do, of course, we'll implement web application firewalls and other systems to protect against different attacks. A web application firewall is basically a mechanism to be a stopgap. You're always, there is no system out there that's 100% secure. Code, it takes a while to write. If you do find a vulnerability in code, you don't get it fixed overnight, typically. We've seen that time and time again over the past couple years with different attacks that have happened against our government. A web application firewall gives you a temporary stopgap so you can put controls in place to block the attack until the code is fixed. We're currently evaluating and getting ready to purchase a more modern file transfer system that's going to integrate and allow group collaboration. Currently, we're using secure FTP, which is great in a lot of ways, but it's not user-friendly, and we need something that's going to be, I don't know how, easy for people to use so they actually use it. We want them to actually want to encrypt their data. If you put too difficult of a wall on somebody, they'll just go around it. So we need to put up an easy means for them to encrypt the data and communicate. We're also, as I mentioned before, going to implement additional intrusion protection systems. So that's the summary of what that is. It looks like a lot, but it's fairly simple.
Yeah, so really simple. That is helpful.
So maybe we can put this back on again for the next discussion. Some questions then. All right. And in the meantime, if anybody has questions, they want follow-up, if we can just get them to Steve, I'm sure we can get answers and documentation back from our IT department. So, all right.
I have a question around security. So, and I'm not, it seems like there's, what we're trying to figure out is also how to bridge that gap. So the county, some counties have their plan, the state has their plan. And I know we keep throwing things to the business practice group, but I'm going to push this one back and say maybe it's a new group that does this. Is how do we, you know, from the voter services and polling centers, come up with what are the standards and how do we make that work for median, you know, all size counties with the IT department sizes that they have? Because that is one of the issues from the commission standpoint is, you know, making sure that's part of the implementation of the bill. And I'm not sure. Handing it to the business practice group while they may have the knowledge. I mean, and I'll talk with them about that at that meeting, but I also would like you all's input of how do we bridge that gap, and is that a different working group that maybe if it's even with some of the IT people from some of the counties, you know, we discovered, if you were saying that most of the other instances were agents and therefore also receive equipment from the state, so that secures it a little bit more right there, and that's not true with the elections model. So I'm not sure who the group is, but I think that's one of the questions that we should answer sooner than later as to how to look at the security, the whole picture.
And I'm willing to help. If any questions you have on that, please, I'm willing to help on anything you need.
That'd be great.
You're willing to be on the committee?
Obviously.
Anything I'm directed to do to help,
okay.
I will.
Okay. That was certainly a volunteer.
Are there any models, Rick, that you guys know, that you know of, that's something similar that we can borrow by invent something new?
If by models you mean, you know, like a template security policy that could be applied at the county level?
It's more the checks and balances. Like, or is that all we need to do? Here's the policy, and we hope everyone's complying, or, you know, that's the,
yeah.
It's that range, right?
There's plenty of templates to be had, and I'm sure Rich can pull them up in 5 seconds. I think there's a business rule kind of question here that I don't know the answer to, and that is if we create something that says the counties have to have an information security policy, who would actually enforce that? Because a lot of them have them, and chances are you have them almost today by virtue of having a PC. There's probably a policy that went with it. But, you know, it's sort of a question of strength and degree of rigor that got put into that work. I happen to know the CIO at Arapahoe County, so that's where I went to first, and he's supposed to send me what they have later this week. So I'll take a look just to get a sense of what's out there. But I still think, you know, at some level we need to have a basic assessment of what the counties are doing. And maybe it's as simple as they have a real basic policy versus a very rigorous one, but just so that we get a sense of it. And then I think Bob brought it up at an earlier meeting. I'm not sure what the scope of this commission's role is with regard to security. Are we, if we find somebody to be deficient, for example, do we have the authority again to tell them you need to step it up, or we're going to move you to Kansas? I don't know, but if we're going to invest the time in trying to assess everyone, it'd be good to have sort of the next step at least in play from a thinking perspective. What are we going to do if we feel like somebody is not meeting the minimum standard for using the system?
Cindy, I agree. I don't perceive this commission's responsibility to be enforcement. However, I think it is prudent if we're going to implement legislation and change our voting system that we do have a process in place which may or may not require additional delegation to another entity to enforce, but there should be a minimal requirement for security in place, and maybe that's our role to look at that.
This is Martha Tierney. I think what we could do is make recommendations, and then they would, if they weren't responded to, the legislature then would have to take that ball and run with it, and we could make recommendations to the legislature as well as to how an enforcement system might be put into place. But I think that's the stick we have, is to be able to make recommendations, and they would be public. And so I think it would be difficult for a county to just say, forget it. We don't have a secure voting system, no problem.
Go ahead, Richard.
This is Richard Westfall. I would echo Martha's assessment of what our authority is or is not as far as recommendations. I think they need to go in one of our reports. I mean, this needs to be a specific heading talking about what is necessary to have secure interface with score system and have secure voting systems, however we end up defining that. I think that needs to be something that is specifically on our plate and that we specifically address in our report. It will have the force and effect, as Martha points out, a recommendation, but it's something that I think it's important. It should be important to us. I think it's important to me, and I think it's something we definitely need to address.
I appreciate everyone's concern, and it is important, and I agree. How many people read the last end user agreement when you installed Microsoft Word? No one read it. I can write policies and send them out there, and some people will comply, and a lot won't. At some point, we have to decide at what point. You know, there are technologies out there as well, just to mention, that you can put and say, okay, we're going to check to see if this endpoint is running securely before we let it in. But of course, those things cost money and take time.
Cindy, I agree. Just last year, we did, as an audit legislative audit committee, did look at security systems within the state from a security audit. Maybe we expand that to include counties in the voting system, but that's other ways that we can go about some type of oversight. Those audits don't get done on an annual basis, but it is some level of oversight in that regard.
Hang on a second. Go ahead. In just a minute. When we're done up at the panel, I'll let you make a comment. Go ahead, Richard.
I think most of the folks that are at this table recall the litigation that was spawned over voting machines. Mm-hmm. And the very premise of the litigation over the voting machines was that this could be hacked. It wasn't safe, secure. The integrity of the voting machines could be violated. So we saw, that was extensive litigation. The Secretary of State's office spent a lot of time defending that. It was very expensive litigation. Those folks are out there. They are not going away. Many of them, I'm sure, could be listening to my comments right now online.
And
no, they're busy scouring the new rules.
This is the one thing that we cannot compromise on. So, otherwise, we'll end up in more litigation, and it'll get ugly. And so, we can't have that.
Well, I would just broaden, as well as enforcement, is looking for ways to help through grants and other funding the counties. Sometimes security is not implemented because the resources aren't there to do that, and so that also needs to be part of our scope and focus, not just the punitive. You're not doing this, because I think everyone agrees they want a secure location. So, if we can do both, that would be great.
Yeah. Do you want to make a comment? Just if you could get back to the microphone, so, or use this one, just so the they can pick you up on line. Just lift it up. There you go.
Sure. Thank you. Doug Town with Disability Relations Group. We have a little bit of experience with IT security as it relates to accessibility, and I may state the obvious to your IT folks, but accessibility software oftentimes initially does not work well with security considerations and security protocols. So it's important to have a good relationship with those companies to help help make that happen. The reverse is also true. A lot of accessibility software creates an open barn door, and that needs to be looked at as well. And of course, we want to be accessible, but we also want to be secure. So it is a two-way street. I just want to, for the commission's consideration when you're looking at security and accessibility.
Thank you. Yeah, I can attest. I can't even get my iPad through the firewall.
You're not alone. Don't worry.
It's nothing against Apple.
I know. anyone else have any comments about security for this round? We'll take it up again next time.
Is there anything in the rules that will reflect security?
I don't think there was anything new brought about by 1303. The rules are mostly, if you look through the set that we put out, they're almost annotated to show, you know, this change is precipitated by section whatever. And I don't think anything new really changed about the security requirements in the bill. So I'm not sure there was anything in the rules that would have specifically addressed that. And I think a lot of that reason is because we feel at the Secretary's office that we have done a lot to address security issues. I think we talked about, you know, additional password protection. At some point, there does become a user balance. You know, we could have somebody put in 8 passwords to be more secure, but at what point does that user have to call in every time they want to get on because they forgot, you know, that they changed it last time? Or, you know, there's just those kinds of considerations that we have to weigh. So we feel that on our end, we've done, I think, what we can to try to secure our system, but some of it is a county issue, and some of it is a financial issue for those counties. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that. I don't think there's anything new in the rules, though. No?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Sounding like something we might have to think about in legislation next year to really help the counties and litigate, you know, legislate that it happens. So.
It sounds like assessing it first might be the first step on that, seeing where the gap is. Assessing first to see if there is a gap.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and then absolutely if there is.
But with 64 counties, you can bet there are going to be some problems. I mean, maybe small, maybe just a few, but.
Well, and we've been doing early voting as well, so that's.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll have this back on next week, and you can just come back in for some Q&A, and if we have any update, we'll let you know.
All right, sounds Thanks. Good. Thanks.
All right, the next item is an NCOA update, and I think that Hillary Rudy was going to do that, so we might have to take a quick break while we find her. So maybe we can take 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
And once you have a couple, it's like.
All right.
So there's another $25. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
We are back. On the final agenda item, which is the NCO update. And Hillary Rudy, our Deputy Director of Elections, has joined us to let us know how that went last week.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So we talked, I think, a couple of weeks ago about the NCOA and the fact that we would be putting that data out to the counties on the 25th. So just to kind of recap what's happened in the last month or so, we did select a different vendor and obtained an exemption under state purchasing rules from using a state-provided vendor and contracted with the vendor. We signed that contract actually last Monday, received the data on Tuesday, and then pushed pretty hard to get data out to the counties overnight between the 25th and 26th. So for the first go-around, we are pretty... I guess we think it was successful in terms of getting the data, building infrastructure, and putting what we need in place, as well as learning about the data, since this was the first time that we've looked at this extensive amount of data. Again, we sorted this into moves within the same county, moves within the state, but to a different county, and then moves out of state. The first files that were placed out on the county's FTP site overnight on the 25th included a very large amount of data. It included all of the things that the NCOA recognizes as a change, including things that we'll likely suppress in future data releases because they're not really changes. For example, the NCOA doesn't recognize mixed case to all uppercase, for example, as the same address. It sees that as a change because it's a standardization. Also things like abbreviations, RD versus ROAD, ST versus street. Many of the files that were included had no true address change, but they had changes in view of the NCOA because they were non-standardized data. So some initial analysis over the last week indicates that we can probably cut about 90% of the size of the file in the next iteration by suppressing non-address changes, so suppressing the standardization. But we are working on doing that. We're also working on getting some additional technology for our office because we're looking at a file size of around 3 million records that we're matching to the NCOA. And obviously, managing that data and access has some limitations. Access can't manage 3 million files. So we have to break that apart. And obviously, there's risk. When we break that apart, there's risk when we put it back together that we mix data or lose data. So we're also working on getting some additional technology that will allow us to scrub that data as a whole list as opposed to breaking it apart. So for the first list, we think that there is certainly some ability to make that more efficient, there's a lot of process changes that we think can be handled by developing requirements and SCORE. So moving forward, we are working on pulling the August list earlier. We'd like to move to an earlier in the month schedule, recognizing that as we approach the election cycle, the earlier we get that data in the county hands, the better it's going to be leading up to an election. So for the August list, we are working with the vendor and working internally to suppress non-changes, so standardization issues. We'll have that data if a county wants to see their standardization issues. We'll also, in the meantime, be doing the ZIP plus 4 imports. We'll be doing an import for El Paso and Pueblo County earlier because they'll have recall elections, and we can't import that while their election is in progress because it would basically reset all of their ballot styles, create a pretty significant problem for them. So we're trying to get that in for those two counties before the election. And then prior to the election being set up in SCORE for the November election, we'll do the remainder of the counties. Just because of the timing, we'll probably look at that again after the election and see if we need to do another one-time ZIP plus 4 push to catch anything that trails. And then we're also, in the meantime, setting up a meeting with the counties to gather requirements for development and SCORE. So this first list probably frankly creates more frustration than anything else, but we're working on that. And then we're hoping that the August list will help us create a good set of requirements. The ultimate goal is that we develop SCORE to be able to take the list in, push it to the counties, allow the counties to process the information. Because one of the really important factors is that we're able to track the cards, track the list processing, all of that in SCORE, because particularly for out-of-state moves, the system needs to see that confirmation and mailing being sent in order to queue that up for potential cancellation under the NVRA if the voter. So we'll keep working on the list. As I said, we're going to push the August list out quite a bit earlier, recognizing that a lot of counties are currently working on the mock election right now. So the August list will contain the same changes as the July list. And in the meantime, we will be setting up a requirements gathering meeting with the county to talk about how we develop this in SCORE. And I think there's a lot of really good ideas that we've already heard from several counties.
Any questions for Hillary?
I don't have questions for Hillary. I hope others do, but I do want to have more conversation on this topic.
So. Okay.
I'm a little confused on how it all works, but SCORE is a centralized database, right? And so those addresses are changed in SCORE in the central database, correct?
Yes, to the extent they're changed. So there's sort of three categories of information that we get from NCOA that the counties will be working. So the first is changes within the county. And if it's an active record and the address change appears to be within the county, then the address is changed in the SCORE database and a confirmation mailing is sent to the old address. If the record's inactive, then they send a confirmation address or a confirmation mailing, but they don't change the record. If it's within the state but not the same county, the same thing, no change to the record, but a confirmation mailing goes. If it appears that the voters moved out of the state, then it's made inactive and a confirmation mailing is sent to try and get the voter to either withdraw or update.
And my confusion is what's the county doing versus what's maintained in SCORE? When you say they, you mean the mailings and the corrections are all done by the county, correct?
That's correct. So we pull the data from SCORE, the active and inactive voter record information, and send that to the NCOA vendor, right, who matches it and sends it back to us. Then we provide that data to the counties, who then are tasked with changing the address, if appropriate, under the statute, and sending the mailings.
So the county actually maintains the record in the SCORE system after they've done the verification of the mailing or whatever they do?
That's right. So all of the records are maintained centrally in the SCORE database, but each county is responsible for its records.
Yeah.
All right. Nobody else has other questions for Hillary? All right. Thanks.
So I've been hearing other struggles from the counties, and I think it's important for the commission to hear. I've invited Amber here to talk a little bit about their experience with NCOA. They've been doing it for quite some time. And I think it's one of the issues we kind of alluded with the business practice group. Is this the place? How to take advantage of what counties have already discovered, and how do we work to implement this bill together with the SOS? And so I think this is an example where we can recover from it, but we had knowledge ahead of time. And so first I'd like to just hear, you know, the experience that they've done with it, and then what's our role as a commission to help this go smoother as we come to decisions, especially when we get into programming of SCORE to implement the bill, and how do we make sure that gap is addressed before we can't do something to recover from it. These aren't programming issues in SCORE yet. So Amber, if you wouldn't mind, if that's all right with the rest of the commission, to talk about their experience.
I don't mind Amber coming up and getting it off her chest, but I don't think that we have a commission have decided whether that's our role or not. I don't mind taking her input, but I think this conversation just keeps coming up as we sort of ad hoc add things on to what we're doing, but I'm certainly happy to take the input.
And I guess this is what I heard, and the reason I would like to put it before the commission is because it's one of the items that I felt Paul Kraft identified in his needs assessment was establishing business practices and then developing after that practice has been aligned to. And I think this is an example of where when you don't do that, the confusion that it can cause, because right now the data that's out there, counties without extensive work can't really use them, and so that's why I do feel it is important for the commission.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Amber McReynolds. I'm the director in Denver. And I did want to share a little bit with the commission today from our perspective and what we received on Friday for the new NCOA records, and we've spent a lot of time taking a look at it. In addition to our experience prior to sort of this method of using NCOA, we have been using NCOA data over the last 2 years. We've been doing it in a different way because we weren't allowed to update records. So we've been sending a lot of mailings. We've developed a lot of applications to process the data in an efficient manner. And we've, I think as Hillary Rudy had mentioned a few meetings ago here at the commission, we have been talking to the state over the last month or so and shared some of our experience, and those conversations have gone really well. And we really, as also a member of the business practices group, would like to see that group continue to look at issues like this and really develop processes prior to the start or the implementation of new things. So I did want to share just a couple examples of why this is important, because this is sort of the second process that has sort of been handed down to the counties in the last year that was not the most efficient way to handle the data, and things had to be done on the county level to basically deal with what was issued to by the state. So I think if we can do a better job in the future of aligning what the county has to do and process with what the state has to do and putting those things together, I think we'll probably end up with a smoother process for everybody who's involved. But just to point out a couple examples. So as Hillary mentioned, when the state sends the data file over to their vendor, the Melissa data doesn't recognize uppercase and lowercase as distinctive. So those are going to look like it's a change. ZIP plus 4 is going to look like it's a change. RD for road versus ROAD would also look like a change to Melissa data. So we have about 460,000 records in Denver, total registered voters in Denver. And in the NCOA file that we received from the state, we have 393,000 records that have showed up as changes. We also ran an NCOA check last week, and our real number is around 30. So according to the state's instruction guide that they've issued to the counties, they would like counties to review every single one of those line items that have shown up as a non-move. So that would be 393,000 lines of Excel, of an Excel document that we would be requested to go through, which would take about 68 days. So that obviously is not going to work for a big county. We're not the only big county out there. So this is going to be problematic for a lot of counties across the state. And to go through an Excel document line by line and review it manually is probably not the most efficient way to do it. So we have developed an application that would remove all of those records that are identified as not true changes. We are sharing that with counties. We've actually talked to El Paso County today as well as Pueblo. We're processing their data and helping them with that now so that they can prioritize and at least make the changes that they need to make that affect their recall elections and prioritize those first. So we've been working with those two specific counties, and we're also going to be, we've set up a webinar with all counties on Thursday to also share this application that will hopefully allow counties to process the data in a more efficient manner. Another item that we identified, we have to inactivate records that for voters that have moved out of the state. So if they're showing that they have an address outside of the state, the law permits us to inactivate their record and then send a confirmation card. The instructions that the state has issued would require us again to go through each one of those individually and produce a confirmation card manually and inactivate the record manually. In SCORE, there is a batch process where we can add all of those records that need to be inactivated into a batch and basically ask the batch to change them from an active status to an inactive status. That process generates the appropriate confirmation card and puts it in the audit log as required by the MVRA process, and we tested that this morning and it works. And we've confirmed that the confirmation cards all show up there as they should. So those are just two examples of what the counties have been instructed to do is a fairly manual process that will take a significant amount of time and resources, and there are other ways to do it in a more efficient manner. And so we just hope that in the future, the business practices group or with the guidance of the commission, some of these processes could go through those groups with the expertise to be able to identify these sort of process flaws before instructions are sent out or before a process is initiated, and then we can sort of make it smoother for everybody. So with that, I can take questions or anything on this. So thank you.
This is Rick Matsumoto. I have a question. It's probably more for Hillary, though, but why don't we standardize the addresses before they go to the vendor?
I think part of this is when we put everything from all the county disparate systems into SCORE, there's a lot of issues with that. So counties had their own separate databases up before 2008. Everything was combined in 2008. So there hasn't been as much standardization, and there's also not a standardized GIS group across the state. So we have GIS in Denver. A lot of the small counties don't utilize it. So that would be my guess, and I'm sure Hillary's got a response on this.
Yeah, there is not all of the addresses are in the statewide database, but right now there is not a single statewide unified address library. The address libraries are maintained by each individual county, so different counties use different abbreviation standards, and the goal is to get them consistent with what the USPS requires. Unfortunately, that tends to vary regionally as well. So one county may hear from their USPS postmaster that this is the standardized approach for, say, apartment numbers, whereas we get from a metro county USPS that it's actually this one. So we're working pretty closely with USPS to try to get these things standardized. But until there's a statewide GIS and until we have a standard statewide address library, I think some of these standardization issues are going to be sort of recurring.
This is Angela Hedon, and I want to thank Amber and Denver County for sharing their expertise. They certainly have been ahead of most of us, and so I do want to thank you all for that leadership and your willingness to help some of the other counties. But I think the point here to me, at least in listening to the conversation, is that it seems like it's apparent to me that we really need to, that we have the processes that we're going through here, that the business practice group needs to approve that process before we implement it so that we wouldn't have what might have happened here, that we were going to have counties do a lot of work unnecessarily. And so, you know, I don't know if anybody else on the commission or I could get some agreement that we really believe that the business practice group should approve processes like this before they're implemented.
I have a comment, if you wouldn't mind taking it.
Sure, go ahead.
This is Judd Choate, the elections director. So just to reiterate for anybody who wasn't listening or didn't understand the first time, this was the first time we had ever done this with this vendor. And we selected this vendor based on the policies that we have to use as a state organization for selecting a vendor. Uh-huh. And that vendor was selected brought on board 3 weeks ago. Then we had to go outside of the state rules to contract with them fast, so that we could get this done by this by the end of this month, which we're required to do under the statute. Then we literally got the contract on Monday. We were issued the data on Tuesday. We were issued it into because we're the state and not a county, we couldn't slice and dice it through our access database like any county could. We have to use an Oracle database, a much larger database, to be able to slice and dice. So, and since we couldn't possibly do that in a week's time, but we had to, under the law, issue it, we submitted it to the counties in the form in which we got it to meet the statutory obligation. As Hillary pointed out, in the months to come, when we actually do have the Oracle database, which would allow us to process this data, we will process it in a way that's much more palatable for the county and meets
the established ways in which the county already does NCOA, which, by the way, we have already been doing. So these would meet the standards that we already met and meet the standards that many of the counties already employ. So this, the idea that this has been done very poorly and it's, you know, the miscommunication between the counties and the state is just wholly inaccurate. That is not what's happened. What's happened is that we had to implement this on a very, very fast basis, and we did. And now all of that data will be available in August when we do the next NCOA. And all the counties right now are working on their mock election anyway. So it's very possible that the counties won't even look at this data before we get them in the next list in August. And we're hoping that by August, we'll have the Oracle database in process that will allow us to do the filter that will take out the capitalization, take out the road abbreviations, take out all that kind of stuff, which will thin the data down to the 10% that actually matters so the counties can process it. This was the first run of doing this and creating our infrastructure to be able to do it. And frankly, under the circumstances, I'm really proud of the work that we did. We did extraordinary work under an incredibly short timeline. And I was getting emails at 12:30 at night from my staff who was working on it last week. So I'm perfectly fine with the fact that as a first run, we got it done, and we got it done under the statute.
Judd, this is Angela again. I certainly don't want anyone to think, and I maybe because I'm on the phone and not there in person, to be able to say, you know, I appreciate the state's hard work on this without a doubt, and I know the timelines are really challenging. I guess what I'm still saying, I'd ask you the question, do you think it would be not a good idea to have the business practice group review processes before they're implemented? It just seems like in working together, I mean, here's an example, and there may be others, but I don't see that it would hurt. And so maybe there's nothing that they, you know, see any different because you all are can foresee all that. But to me, it just helps. It's kind of like a double check. And so that's what I'm recommending. Do you see a problem with having the business practice group review it before we implement processes?
So if I could comment to that, Senator, that's a perfectly fine standard, and obviously the business practices group exists, and we're happy to work with them. And those comments weren't directed at you, Senator.
Yes, so if I may, as I believe I may have been the one they were directed at, the point that I wanted to bring up is we had had conversations of how to not be at this point. Meaning,
Can
I finish my statements,
it's about
please?
Time.
Yes, I'm very familiar with that. As we often get demands on our end to have to meet things under extreme pressure and time. I am familiar with that equation, extremely familiar with that equation. And what I would like to take advantage is we do have knowledge. How do we share that in a way that helps everyone? Because I do believe that we could have done things differently, including which we offered was to have Denver work with the data because of the tight timeline and offer that to other counties. And we didn't take that opportunity to have that process done. That's what I would like us to figure out, because we do have tight timelines with this bill. And that's my reasoning for bringing it to the commission, is to see what's our role in using all of our state's knowledge in order to meet the demands that this new bill is bringing for implementation.
All right. I mean, let me just say from our staff's perspective, we have the exact same feeling about the implementation of 1303. So when you come to us in this sort of adversarial role and you bring somebody in and you have them talk to us about how it's best to work together because then we don't have problems down the road, it's really hard for us to sort of sit here and just continue to take it and take it when the whole issue is the implementation of 1303, and that's why we're on these tight timelines. I think we've done everything in our power as a staff to implement this bill in a way that is fair,
that is, we're trying to move it along as quickly as we can. You know, Hillary has also been involved in writing those 200 pages of rules. We don't have unlimited resources in the office, and we do a great job with what we have, and people are up until midnight, and people are skipping vacations, and people are doing all this work. So when you come to us in this sort of debate mentality, it's just really hard for us to respond in any logical way. We all agree the best thing to do is to work together. I think maybe we don't agree on what that means. We can't always present everything to the committee before we, you know, implement it because of the timelines that we're under. Do we ever think it's a bad idea to share things with people? No. We never think that's a bad idea. Do we sometimes not end up doing it because of the timelines? Yes. So can we do this better? Yes. Are we always interested in hearing that? We are. But this really kind of back and forth is probably not a good forum for us to be doing it in, because I think that it's a more public forum. It's a more maybe the way this just happened was pretty adversarial. So I'll just say that we agree with you. We would like to see that happen, and we are moving forward with trying to work with the commission, to work with the association, to work with the legislature, and to ensure that these kinds of things get implemented, including cleanup bills, including practices, rules, everything that the office is doing. But you just have to understand that we are under some incredible pressure here. And I understand the clerks are, too. They're implementing a new procedure, too, and so is everybody else. But it's just not a positive place to hash that out.
Quick follow-up to that, though. I'm not part of either one of the staffs of the association or the clerk's office or the Secretary of State staff, so this is new to me. I appreciate the knowledge that there were differences in opinion on how the NCOA match went, because when we heard from Hillary, she went through everything very thoroughly and explained that they were working with Denver and came to a good place. But for me, this is new information, and so I assume that of the other commissioners. If there was this similar ratio of inaccuracies in the matching across county, you know, across the counties, we should know about that. And I mean, blame, or, you know, who to blame or whatever, but moving forward, I mean, that's a huge disparity from 393,000 records to 30. I didn't know if you meant 30,000 or 30 records, 30,000. And not to joke, because I understand that you work through a quick timeline, but we should be privy to that information. And so if it wasn't brought up here, I don't know how it would have been brought up to us.
Well, it was brought up. It was on the agenda to have an NCO presentation, but it wasn't. I mean, obviously, Amber was invited by one commission member. We were certainly going to give you an update about that, and it's not something that we were seeking to avoid talking about. I think Hillary was very honest about, you know, this caused a problem and we're working on it. It's our hope that counties aren't going to have to go line by line and that we'll have the new data out in August. You know, so we weren't trying to not tell the commission about that. I'm just saying that sort of having this one-off in front of the commission is probably not a really good use of resources. Go ahead.
Cindy, agree. I think there is a difference between just acknowledging information and sharing information, which I do think we're trying to do that. I hesitate to start pointing fingers and trying to change things within the functioning, both of the county clerks and the Secretary of State's office, when we really don't have any basis yet to do that. So if we decide that this commission should be focused on policies and procedures going forward, then the way we can change the process to put those guidelines in place for future use. But I do agree that under the timeline we're under with this bill, and it has put us all in a precarious situation, that we need to allow the Secretary of State a little discretion and keep moving forward so we don't get bogged down in a debate over some of these issues.
Well, I think it's important to hear about the problems, and I think you explained the problem. I mean, the data had, in the future, in August, will be we'll be modified, we'll be massaged so that we only send the 30 changes, the real changes. So I think what we heard about was a problem, but there's a solution to it. And in fact, it doesn't sound like the kind of problem we need a permanent you know, fix of the business practices committee reviewing every change. I mean, it sounds like a one-off to me. Second thing I want to say is that I think we're going to have a lot of these. I mean, this is a tough deal. We've got some implementation problems here that are large in magnitude and many in number, and so we're likely, if we let ourselves, let this meeting devolve to debates on how we have done things and blaming each other. I think we need to be very careful about that. I think we need to think about understanding what the problems are as we go forward, both real and future, but we need to just hear about them and not let it devolve into a debate on in this forum. This is not the right place, but I mean, we need to hear about a problem that's been identified and either solved or not solved. And if it isn't solved, who's going to solve it? And then we move on. But I mean, I'm not comfortable with a debate between the Secretary of State and the clerks in this forum.
Do you have a suggestion of how you'd like those problems? I mean, and again, frustration on both sides of how do we, I mean, we saw some of this coming, and so how do we, I mean, it may not have felt like it, and I apologize for my role in that, but it really is we have some, like, when you know something's coming a direction, how do we help not end up there when needs are different on the different sides, and how to involve the commission in that. And maybe it's part of next week's conversation.
Well, I've talked in the past about this looking like a big implementation program to me. And if I were the program manager of that, which I have been in the past, I would keep a list of these kinds of problems that had occurred. You know, I'd want to know everything anybody ever encounters that looks like a problem to them. I'd keep a running list of whether that one was solved or, you know, if it wasn't solved, who had the action to go come back with a solution to it. And I would, you know, I'd want that to be one of my major tools, a list of lessons learned and problems that I anticipate in the future. But I would pretty much assign somebody to go off and think about it rather than try to solve it in this forum.
Well, I don't know. This is Elena, just to jump in. I do think there is a role for the commission to learn from the implementation of one of the major pieces of the bill, what worked and what didn't, and then figure out how to use that for future issues that are likely to come up. As someone who's not directly involved from either the Secretary of State's office or clerk's perspective, it sounded to me from both Hillary and Amber that all involved worked incredibly hard. It was an incredibly challenging timeline. Everyone pitched in, and yet still it was challenging. So that's not really pointing fingers, but how can we then, moving forward, are there pieces that we think, like the NCOA activation, are going to pose similar challenges either more on the county side or the state side, and how can the other entities provide support? And it may be that there's not another apples-to-apples comparison, but it seems to me as we think about voter service and polling centers coming online or creating the all-mail ballot delivery or, you know, different pieces, we could be in a similar place. And it may be the business practice subgroup that can play part of that role. It may be the commission, but thinking about how can we provide support, because everyone is working incredibly hard under a challenging timeline to make sure that this law works well for everyone. So I appreciated hearing, you know, the perspectives from the different players, and I think that there is a role for many of us who are a little bit more removed to figure out what can we learn and how can we support the work moving forward.
And I just say, you know, I agree with that, and I think that's a conversation we should have next week, because there are going to be 100 of these coming up between now and November, and I think the commission needs to decide, you know, at what level does it get involved? You know, what kinds of things are they interested in hearing about? Because beyond this, there are going to be some things that are very in the weeds that the commission probably wouldn't understand or wouldn't want to be a part of. I mean, that happens just to me in my role, you know, that there are a lot of things that go on that I'm not going to have knowledge of and that are going to be delegated. And, you know, I certainly don't have the expertise to make a decision at that level. So I think that's a much broader discussion, and I would agree with that, Richard.
I guess the only question I have, this is Richard Westfall for those of you on the phone, is the process. I don't necessarily have any issues about wanting to know about there was a disagreement between the Secretaries of State's office and the clerks on this, you know, what a problem that Judd, I thought, described quite well. That being said, the manner in which it seemed to have come up, which was one commission member call, and I want this.
I mean, I want to. How do we do this?
I think It should go on the agenda in a proper fashion, and it needs to go through the chair to be properly in order. We have a public comment period that's specifically designated at the very beginning. If this was to be raised as just a simple public comment, that's perfectly appropriate. It's an open public comment period. People can make their comments. If it's going to be handled during the business session of the commission, it needs to go to the chair and it needs to be properly part of the agenda. And the appropriate people, like Judd, needs to understand that this is going to be discussed and that so that all the proper information can be presented in an orderly fashion. Otherwise, I think we can easily get off track, as you, Madam Chair, so ably characterized.
Thanks. One thing I would just say is what I heard was a request when it had specifically to do with either decisions or next steps made by this commission or in concert with the Secretary of State's office being handed down to the counties. I don't want to glaze over what happened because you brought it up. I didn't understand the magnitude of the difference between what was shipped out or received by the counties. For example, maybe we were too fast on the timeline, but if it was shipped in this way to a county that didn't know how to fix it, it could have also been paired with some instruction on how to fix it, acknowledging the problem. You know, small things like that could maybe make a big difference, but I'm not suggesting I know how to fix something that intricate. What I'm saying is I don't want to glaze over the request from how I understood. And so if we can talk about it next time, I just think that that's one thing that I heard, and it could have maybe been addressed on the front end and not completely avoided, right?
Perfectly, it was addressed on the front end.
Well, a point of quick clarification, what was shipped was not inaccurate data. It was data that the NCOA match found to be changed, mm-hmm. either non-conforming data, non-standardized data, or address changes. And so, in fact, if we suppress the sort of non-standardized data when we send out the next list, we are taking out some of the data that the NCOA has returned as actionable data. And we're doing it because we see it as stuff that just needs standardization or, again, caps to mixed case characters. But the data we shipped was accurate from the NCOA standpoint, and we did include instructions with how to handle the data. I think the larger disagreement was that the instructions that we sent were very manual in nature, because at this point in time, our task is to address the needs of 64 counties, and that ranges from counties with 460 voters to counties with upwards of 500,000 voters. And so sometimes manual is the approach we take for that standardization the first time out of the gate. So I just wanted to clarify that the data we sent was not inaccurate. It was large, yes, and that's why I said we thought we could reduce the list by as much as 90% in the next one by removing that non-standard data. So I just wanted to clarify that it was accurate.
So on that problem of sending that huge file and it'll be reduced next time, your course of action is pretty much, you have figured out this exact problem for the next time? I mean, I know you gave a timeline that you're trying to accelerate it even to the beginning of the month rather than the end. So is the problem solved for this particular issue?
Yes, we believe it is. We've done some internal testing, and that's why I say we believe we can reduce the list by as much as 90%. So we believe that the list, if we had suppressed last week the non-standardized data, it would be closer to 350 or 365,000 records as opposed to 3 million records. So we believe we can reduce it significantly by suppressing CAFs to mixed case characters and by suppressing ZIP plus 4 and by suppressing abbreviated names like road, street, et cetera. So we believe we found an answer to that. There's still risk probably in the August list because as we mentioned, we need a bigger tool to do this job. So we're still going to have to break this apart in order to do it. But we've identified what we believe is an appropriate measured approach to that. And we are, you know, purchasing the larger or, you know, beginning the process to purchase the larger tool in order to do it as a single list to mitigate that risk of breaking the list apart. So yes, we believe we have a fix to this particular problem.
And then apart from the process conversation, you know, that we'll have next week or in the weeks to come, has anybody from the Clerks Association or any of the individual counties, do they agree with you about the next match, that it's solved? Or is that just your independent assessment?
We've been looking at the data since late last week and doing, you know, the suppression of non-standardized data. I don't believe that we'll have agreement with the clerks as to whether that's fixed or not until we push that August list out. But I believe that based on the numbers that Amber provided in terms of reducing it from over 300,000 to about 30,000, that that is consistent with what we have found on a statewide level, reducing from 3 million to just under 400,000. So I think the number they told me this morning was somewhere between 335 to 365,000 statewide. So I think that's consistent. But no, we have not done that suppression yet. We'll do that on the next list and provide it to the counties. And I believe that, yeah, they will agree with us at that point.
This is Angela Keaton. I'm wondering, and certainly I guess not being there, it's really different on the phone, and I feel like I, you know, partly led to opening a can of worms when I do believe that we all are, let me get this phone here, that we all want the same thing. And so maybe would I, could I ask that the Secretary of State's office come back with a recommendation on how we would implement different issues or aspects of 1305 when we're going forward? Because I believe everybody on the commission and certainly the Secretary of State staff and county clerks all want this to go as smooth as possible, but it is challenging. But I can tell you, as we work through the bill, we believed it's possible. So I'm still there. I believe it's possible. It's challenging, but we can get it done. But the only way we get it done is we're going to cooperate with each other and try to not think that someone's trying to pull something over another group, but that we all just want to get this done in the best way so that the voters of our state are going to have the best opportunity to make their voices heard. And so I think that's what we're all looking for. So can I get, is that a possibility for the Secretary of State staff to look at their recommendation on how we might go about this?
I mean, we can look at what kind of issues we think are appropriate for the commission, but I don't know that that's really our decision. To date, I've just, whatever the commission has wanted to hear about, I have presentations done by appropriate staff members. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on in the secretary's office that we don't bring in front of the commission. We have, 200 pages worth of rulemaking that has to go through a certain process in the Administrative Procedure Act. Thursday, we have a meeting with some of the people from the County Clerks Association to talk about those kinds of issues of communication and how to move forward in this bill, working together and communicating. We have an interjurisdictional meeting with all the other groups 2 weeks from today to bring in the special districts and the municipalities. So it's certainly not it's certainly not that the Secretary of State's office just hands down policies and doesn't talk to other people about that. We do communicate constantly with groups through rule notices, notices of hearings. Just everything we do is pretty much public facing. So I'm not sure that an issue like this, even if we presented more often, would have, I don't know how it would have been any different. I think the only way it could have been different is if we had held back the data for longer and gone through the process to try to clean it out, or not pushed it out in July and waited till August, which would have been a violation of the bill. So, sometimes there's just things that maybe can't fix, but go ahead.
Cindy, I agree. I think the real issue here is that we just pointed out a technical requirement of our voting system, which needs to be focused on accuracy of data, and that is something that should go in the needs assessment and the system requirements, and we let the system professionals address the issue, and we move on.
But if it's a risk, if it's a technical risk, actually implementing the law in a proper fashion with transparency and accuracy, then we need to know about it. We need to talk about it.
And I think that's what we need to decide when we talk about the focus of this commission and what our goals are and what we're trying to accomplish. And maybe the line is going to be when there's risk, or maybe the line's going to be whatever. I don't know, but that's something we need to decide. What is our role as a commission?
And this clearly falls in the category of risk. but we've heard a good report. We've had some good dialogue on how to overcome the risk. We just have to monitor it and make sure the next time data comes out that it's usable by the clerks, you know, that it's boiled down to just changes. So I think it's a valid concern. Just not sure we ought to get into dialogue, you know, adversarial dialogue here. So,
Cindy, agree. I agree it's a risk. And I think for that reason, we need to work with the technical support to address it so that we don't get bogged down in it being the responsibility totally of the clerks or Secretary of State's office. But if we're going to invest resources in a system and in technology that will address the integrity of our voting system, then this should be one of the issues that it's able to resolve.
This is Elena. I've got a separate question related to the NCOA to get back to more the implementation. When you talk about the suppression of data, does that mean that those changes aren't then made to the record and just ignore them and only do things that are substantive changes? Or is it that at some point the records could be updated to bring them into standardization, whatever that means, but because it's not actually a substantive change, it doesn't trigger notification, confirmation cards, etc.? Like, how does that work?
So the purpose of suppressing the non-standardized data would be to put only those things that are true address changes out to the county so that they could trigger the address changes and confirmation mailings as appropriate. The ZIP plus 4 is one of the big sets of non-standardized data that's in this go-round, and we have two pushes set that we're doing at the state level. We're pushing into SCORE the ZIP plus 4 for all address changes that had no other change except the addition of the plus 4. We'll be pushing first Pueblo and El Paso to get those in before their recall elections are live. And then in the interim, we'll be pushing in the remainder of the states. We'll reevaluate those or that data after the election to see whether there's a large chunk that still shows up in the data, to see whether we need to do a one-time push at the state level again to catch those. So we'll monitor that. But the goal is that then the ZIP plus 4 becomes something that the counties will manage on an ongoing basis. But because most counties haven't maintained the plus 4 prior to SCORE, it wasn't something that was really maintained in the legacy systems. And it's really become important with intelligent mail barcode. It's a new requirement pushed out from the Postal Service. We want to push that one time at the SCORE level so that the counties don't have to go into every single one of the 3 million records and update that. In terms of non-standardized postal addresses like road versus RD and ST versus street, how they classify apartment numbers, those sorts of non-standard data, we're working first with the USPS to figure out exactly what the standard is, because again, that tends to vary from postmaster to postmaster, and sometimes it just varies from election year to election year. So we're trying to get the answer first before we have the counties do a lot of widespread data cleanup. So we're focusing on substantive changes first.
Right. So that could be something that gets revisited in the future, but for now, just putting those aside, minus the ZIP plus 4 to focus on the actual moves.
Yes. But from our perspective, it was pretty important to understand the scope of non-standardized issues that NCOA was pushing back. I mean, it's significant.
Richard?
Madam Chair, Richard Westfall, for those on the phone. I'm just going back and looking at 1303 and Section 20 of the bill. Has a lot of detail law in it about this very issue, and it's clearly within our charge as part of the 1303 Commission to be looking at this. I think this requires, you know, a more structured approach to allow us to get the information as opposed to what we're doing here today, which is kind of ad hoc and just, you know, touching on things. This is obviously a significant issue, as Commissioner Rankin identified, I think we just need to be. This needs to be one of the things that's on our plate, and I think we need to methodically and thoughtfully address it. And I think we've kicked it enough today. I would recommend that we move on and make sure that this is something that's on our radar and that we deal with in a systematic fashion.
Before we move on, there are immediate elections within the next 6 weeks. And so my question and answer is more just to understand the communications at this point, putting aside the process question till next time, is that maybe Hillary can speak to this or that either Hillary's can speak to this. Follow-up communication on the I understand the difference. You're pushing out the data and explaining that you need to line item review it because there are significant changes that you need to make, et cetera. What's the follow-up communication to the counties on that prior to the August change? Or is there any direction on how to deal with this or wait on it? Or what is the communication back and forth with the counties, if any?
I know the association I know we'll be doing some webinars on Thursday to help counties look at what they have. Denver is going to volunteer some of their tools. Denver's also reached out to El Paso and Pueblo County and is going to work with their data people as well so that they can get a start with the data that's available. They have some processing tools that help make the correspondence part of it as well, and they've done some pretty extensive testing on have the functionality of it. So, and then actually, I mean, it's anyone wants to sit in, you're welcome to, but that might be.
And both El Paso and Pueblo are participating in whatever it is that Denver's offering.
I know El Paso's going to look at the tools, and Pueblo, yeah, has taken Denver up on it.
This is Hillary Rudy. We, as part of the information we put out, we also encourage counties to contact directly the SCORE customer support desk. We will have staff that will sit in on that webinar later this week. In addition to that, we're fielding calls on a daily basis, as we always do, just taking questions, discussing the data that's there. In the meantime, on Thursday, we'll be pulling a data set to compare with the Melissa data again, because August is essentially here. So again, we intend to move the timetable up so that those lists are coming earlier in the month. And so what we're going to do this month in August is pull it earlier, see what our realistic turnaround is, because our turnaround this time was really hampered by, you know, the contracting issues and the infrastructure issues. So we hope to have a much more realistic timetable for the counties in terms of when we can put the data out in the future.
And last question, primarily on El Paso and Pueblo, because the ballots hit that that week of the 18th, I think. So all of this is assuredly, for the most part, as best you can, cleaned up before they're sent, correct?
We're working very very closely with both El Paso and Pueblo counties as they implement their recall elections. In fact, we'll be down in El Paso meeting with both counties on Wednesday, discussing all of the things that they need to be aware of in terms of House Bill 1303 that affect the recall elections. We are doing everything we can to make sure both counties are well prepared to conduct the recall elections and that they have all of the support from our office that they need.
All right, thanks. I think the next agenda item is generally just setting the agenda for the next meeting. We have another update by on the voting system report. You have that on there, Steve?
So I have four agenda items right now. The weekly briefing from SLI, the security in-depth discussion with the Q&A, goals and mission, which was a carryover from last week, and I'm not sure how to word this one, but the continued discussion on how to handle projects going forward, such as the NCOA.
Oh, I think that'll be part of the goals discussion. So that's probably all one and the same.
There was one more that I had asked about, and it was the public comment for rules is August 7th. And did we, as a commission, and maybe that comes up as part of the what's our role conversation, but if we want to discuss the rules before they get written, we have a small window as a commission. And since the rules seem to be critical in implementing House Bill 1303, I would recommend that maybe we look at what next week's agenda is and what time do we have.
I agree.
Well, the rules are out for pre-comment right now.
And is it the 7th? I thought pre-comments were due the 7th.
7th, and then it'll be noticed, and then the actual hearing will be, I think, mid-September. So if we can't get it in before the pre-comment, we can still issue comment during the regular rulemaking process.
That's true, too.
And
I'm wondering if we could, this is Angela on the phone, I'm wondering if we could have something on there that it may or may not be in our discussion of, you know, what our mission is, but I do believe that implementation issues needs to be almost a separate item. It may be covered in that, but I'd like to have that as an agenda item.
Okay. So could you list it under that, Steve, maybe as a subsection of that main discussion? Go ahead, yeah. Representative.
Hillary mentioned it, but, you know, our horizon has changed dramatically with this September 10th election. I mean, we've been thinking about, are we ready for November? I wonder if we shouldn't have a whole separate agenda item to say what are the special challenges that arise because of the recall election in those two counties. I mean, there's bound to be some significant risk getting ready for those. So,
well, we could probably do an update for the commission. We'll be meeting with Pueblo and Colorado Springs on Wednesday to talk about guidance and rules with them and the processes. So it might be, maybe we could do a briefing.
Back on that.
Yeah, okay. We'll do a briefing on that.
And I have one other one that is probably not for next week, but for the clerks, you know, I want to make sure we capture any problems or discrepancies that come out of the mock elections going on now. So I don't know when those are over. I don't remember the timeline, but let's just make sure that we're going to put that on the agenda in the future and, you know, ask for a report back for any. So again, this goes along with my concept of capturing everything that might go wrong, you know, every possible risk and discrepancy. So I think that's a valuable tool, and we should capture those at some point in the future. Okay.
And then for the meeting on the 12th, the 5th we can do at 1, but on the 12th, I know I won't be available. I talked to Senator Giron. She's not entirely sure whether she'd be available that day, and I was wondering if we could move the meeting till maybe 9 o'clock or if that worked with people's schedules to
nine
move
in the morning
it.
On the
yeah. Would that be all right?
Check.
That's fine.
Oh, on the 4 in the morning. Oh, sorry. 9 o'clock.
The 12th, would that be all right?
Yeah, no, we have a meeting in multi-party.
On what?
So we can move it to 9 o'clock in Grand Junction.
Oh, I have to be at the multi-jurisdictional meeting at 1, and I'll try to get that reset to another time when I'm there, but
I could do 9 o'clock on the 12th.
And I'll make sure Fran can. I can't. We already have a meeting with county commissioners.
Oh, okay. Could you do 10, or if we moved it a little bit?
I could do 11.
11?
I think this one's going to take an hour and a half, and to get here, yeah, still 10:30.
I mean, we could do an 11 to 1. Do it over lunch.
That's, works for me.
Does that work for everyone? 11 to 1?
11 to 1?
Yeah, on the 12th?
Yeah, that's been canceled. Yeah.
Okay. All right, 11 to 1, Steve?
Yep, and we have the room available, so
okay.
I'll update that.
All right, great.
So, Suzanne, are we going to have any conversations again about going to other parts of the state?
Yeah, and we talked last time and thought we would do that in our conversation about kind of what our goals were and objectives
okay.
and taking public comment or having public hearings. So I think it's going to be part of the discussion
right.
next week. We might not finish it, but we'll at least put some ideas on the table.
Great. Thank you.
So
all right.
5 agenda items for next week. SLI weekly briefing, security in depth, goals and mission, rules discussion, and recall election update.
Yep. Sounds good. Okay, great. Then we're adjourned.